Oh, hi, everybody. My name is Charlie Bourne, and I'm pleased to be hosting another American Spaniel Club Oral History Project podcast where people share their history and preserve it for the future. So today, we're going to welcome Sharon Gerling, who is a 2013 Hall of Fame member, along with her late mother, Dorothy Christensen. They're my Idaho Cockers, party color Cockers, have long been a quality standard within the breed. And a brief introduction to Sharon and Dorothy can be found on the Hall of Fame page on the ASC website. Sharon, very welcome to the podcast today.
Well, thank you very much, Charlie. It's an honor to do this.
Well, we're really pleased that you're doing it as well. So, you know, as I always say, we might as well get started. And the best place to start when you're talking about your life with Cocker Spaniels is to start at the beginning. So my first question is always, you know, when did you become interested in Cocker Spaniels? Tell me more about that. And, of course, include your mom in that story as well.
Okay. When I was about 6 years old, my parents decided they needed a puppy. So they went out and bought a little buff female. And then my mom went to a dog show, and she decided, well, she would like to show dogs. So then she started breeding them and figuring out how to, you know, raise Cocker Spaniels. And
right.
So she made her very first champion in about 1951. And I won my first junior handler when I was 7 years old. And at that time, you could just borrow a dog and show it. And I've only been to a couple shows. I didn't even know what to do. And anyway, I guess I watched good enough to win this. So it was pretty exciting.
Yeah. So that was 1961 when your mother finished the first dog?
51.
Oh, 51.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I thought it was 51, but I wanted to make sure.
Yeah.
And then I heard 61. That's a long time ago. She was right there in those early days. Were there many people in Idaho, by the way, that were breeding Cockers? Were your parents living there in Idaho?
Yeah, we lived in Lewiston, which was a long ways from everybody. And
uh-huh.
It took us about 8 hours whenever we drove to Seattle, and sometimes it took us 12 hours because of the construction, and it was all gravel roads. My mom loved to drive the car, so she would just take off and, I mean, she'd go to Texas and show, and she'd go to Los Angeles and show, and she just traveled all over. She loved to drive. So,
bless her.
I had the opportunity to go with her.
Yeah, bless her for that. So I would imagine your mom was chief in sort of nurturing and guiding your interests. So share with us some of those experiences and any other mentors, families, or, you know, friends that you had, and tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, my mom entered me in junior handling at almost all the shows. Even though we didn't have a dog that for me to show, we would borrow one. And I showed many different breeds in the junior handler. So I think that's what really got my interest going. And then my mom, she had to learn how to trim dogs and show dogs. So she went to Honey Creek Kennels. In fact, my very first pet cocker was from breeding that we made when we bred Honey Creek Hero. And that was the dog that my mom let me have. And I could do anything I wanted with this dog. And I taught her all kinds of tricks. She rode on my horse. We were in many, many parades and with this dog behind me. And I would put my arm out to the side, and she would stick her head through there and brace her head. And that's how we could gallop and everything with this horse. It was really amazing.
Creek is a very famous party collar kennel. Was that near Idaho? I don't know where they were located.
No, I don't remember where it was, but my mom got in a car and drove to her house and stayed with me for a while, and she taught mom how to groom cockers. And helped her, because the Honey Creek Cockers had that beauty that my mom liked. And so,
yeah.
And then she went over to Alice Swiderski's place, and she liked she liked the way that the Rex Point dogs moved. So Alice actually helped us a lot. And every time I seen her at a national or something, I would usually take a couple dogs up to her and ask her what she thought of them. And sometimes I would take two and I'd ask her. I know one time I took two and I asked her which one has the best neck and shoulders, you know, so she could show me. And Alice was really very helpful to us. We always tried to buy a dog from Alice, but she always said she never had one that would suit us, so I don't know about that. But anyway, we never did buy one from her, but she was very, very helpful.
Yeah, those are two big names in Party Colors that I don't know if everybody listening remembers those, but they should go back because, you know, they were really instrumental with Party Colors.
We bred to several of Alice's dogs, and then Mom showed dogs for Carol Biggs, and I can't remember.
Oh, really? Carol Biggs?
Yeah, I can't remember. Yeah, Carol helped us on the breeding of dogs, and she said you don't want to change very much on a dog when you breed a dog. If you breed long to short, you want to kind of go medium. You don't want to do any exaggeration with the breeding. So Mom always, she always tried to change them slowly.
Right.
I can't even remember the name of the dog, but Mom bought a famous dog from Carol. But the dog, right before she was going to ship it, it jumped on the top of the fence and hung itself on the collar. So we did get the dog, but I can't remember the name of that dog, but it was going to be our dog.
This is Carol Biggs of the in New England, right? That breeder?
Yeah, Mom would, she would just drive to these kennels and
I
mean she visited people all the time. I never really got to go. She's been to Ruth Cracky's place too, and she went to Cottonwood Kennels. So we bought a Cornerstone there. I'm pretty sure that Mom just drove down there and got him.
Carol Biggs, the Biggs Cockers were ASCOBs. She bred mostly ASCOBs, right?
Back when we started with the Party Colors, that was always our favorite color. But to get the quality you wanted, you had to we color crossed a lot. Our first Best in Show winner, Promise to Marysville, he had a Miss Mark mother. So Potato Patty. She was Norbill's Fantabulous.
That's ASCOB too, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we did quite a bit of color cross. And then Mom bought, when we bought Cornerstone, it wasn't for us. We bought it for our friend Bertha Simpson that Mom showed for. So we did buy dogs for other people, not dogs for us.
Right. Yeah, the Biggs, if people don't know, Ted Young handled for them, and they have a Spaniel Club Best in Show winner, and they had a number of big winning dogs. Bob was president of the Spaniel Club at one time, and so they were very famous in dogs.
Yeah,
your mother, it was fascinating to hear you tell the story. Your mother just drove everywhere.
Yeah, she did. She grew up on a farm with her father, and actually her father wanted her to be a cook for the, I guess, not ranch hounds, but anyway, I guess they had some kind of a farming deal. And so my mom actually left town with my dad. And anyway, they ended up in Lewiston, and she never wanted to stay on a farm or anything. And she did definitely, I mean, she would drive everywhere. I mean, I can't believe all the places we went.
Well, you know, and we didn't have the interstate highway system that we had today. So it was a much harder, you know, drive, right?
So
those are fascinating stories. Any other famous names? Those are really some famous names.
She went to see Ruth Cracky, too. So she's been to almost all the... Mom always... if anybody said anything about anything, Mom always wanted to get to the bottom of it. So she was like an investigator. So if somebody spread a rumor about something, she would go find out if the rumor was true or not. So she's really kind of an amazing person.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So looking back on your long time in dogs, you know, this inevitable question, what do you know now that you wish you had known then?
Okay, my problem with that would be I grew up with the problem. I mean, we've had dogs probably in the ring for the, probably for 70 years. And every year, I kind of think we probably finished a dog almost every year, the 70 years, I would think. But but anyway, I can't really think of anything because I grew up with all the changes.
Right. So. Yes, 70 years. You kind of, you know, we go back 70 years. It was right after, well, the breed separated with the English in the mid-40s, and you were active in the early 50s. So, you know, that's a long, continuous time. You've seen the breed change a lot.
Yeah, and AKC, if you entered dogs, like you put more dogs in the ring and you didn't show them, AKC would come and check your crates to see if the dog was in the crate. So you had to, if the dog was on the show grounds, it had to walk in the ring. So I can remember all of those days.
I remember that too. I remember that too. That's interesting you should mention that. When I was a kid, I remember them talking about, well, the dog, if you're not going to show the dog and he's on the ground, you got to do something because if the AKC finds out, you'll get penalized for it or something. Yeah,
yeah, and you had to get him in the ring because back then people would either make a major or break a major or they would do all kinds of stuff like that because the entry fees were cheap and you could take extra dogs because I think we only paid like $7 an entry to enter a dog. And so nowadays it's getting very expensive to do this.
So in the 70 years, the next question, you know, the 70 years you've been in dogs and, you know, things have changed so much. And, you know, it's much different than it was back in the 50s and 60s and 70s and so forth. And, you know, we talked about that and you've sort of grown up with that and seen the changes. So, you know, what do you advise people who are trying to begin in Cockers today with the way things are now versus when you started?
Well, I think nowadays the people really have to go find the dog laws to where they live and try to breed accordingly to the area they're in or else plan on moving if they, you know, get too involved with the dogs because it's really tough anymore to, 'cause if you're in a 3-dog limit and it doesn't take much for somebody to complain about your dogs barking or something if you're, so it's almost impossible. But if you have a good mentor, you can raise show dogs on a small scale. You do have to place your older dogs so you can keep a puppy if you want to keep showing, if you have a limit, but it is possible to raise dogs on a smaller scale. But back in the old days, we actually had 2 lines of dogs. So, and we didn't breed the 2 lines together. We kind of inbred those 2, and then we bred the 2 lines that we had together that were separate. And nowadays, it's impossible to do that. So, and my advantage over most of the people is that I have seen the whole background of my dogs. I've raised them. You know, they lived with me. So, and that's really, you can't do that anymore unless you have a big kennel.
Yeah, that's interesting. There's two things you raised. One is, you know, zoning laws are so much stricter than they were when I was a kid or you were a kid or, you know, and unless you're living way out in the country somewhere, and even in the country, there are zoning laws. I can remember people that live in the middle of nowhere, and yet there's a law that says no more than 3 dogs on a property and you've got 6 acres or something, you know. So it's kind of difficult. But then, as you said, you can be a small breeder and have quality. But you raised the interesting thing about having the two separate lines. Did you use that as well? My recollection of party colors back when I was a kid is they didn't have any hair. And some of the party color breeders that I know crossbred with ASCOBs to get coat on them and certain type. And you mentioned that you crossbred. So this is a little off topic, but maybe you could talk a little bit about that, because I think that's probably interesting for people who are listening, because you have so much history.
Yeah, we did. We used Norbill's kennels quite a bit and the Harlan mm-hmm. Haven Cockers. And we did color cross a lot. So, and I know that my mom had a black and tan. I can't remember its name. So, but anyway, she just bred mostly for the quality.
Mm-hmm.
And she really didn't care. And the mismarks, we just placed them in pet homes and kept the ones that were either spotted or solid and showed them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm. Right. A little off topic, but I seem to remember your mother had a Best in Show ASCOB. Or is my memory bad?
Well, she bought Cottonwood Cornerstone, and she showed him. I think she co-owned him with Bertha Simpson, and he was a group winning dog. So I don't think we had a best, but our Best in Show winning Promise to Marysville, his mother was a Miss Mark ASCOB.
You know, one of the other things is that considering that at the time so many cockers were handled by professionals, your mother, or than you, finished almost all your dogs, right? I mean,
we did everything with our dogs. We trained them, showed them, and to this day, I'm still training and showing them and grooming them and everything. I'm thinking about hiring a handler, though, but anyway, Marie Santos helped us out, and but we have always, Mom liked the competition. She was, and if she lost or something, she wanted to find out why she lost. So she mm-hmm. was she's a very determined person.
Yeah. You know, I didn't show a lot, and we used a handler, but the time for the 10 years or 12 years that I showed our own dogs, I learned so much showing them. So I think your mom probably did as well as did you. You sort of learn, you really learn your dogs. You have to live with whatever faults or virtues they have. You have to show them, you know.
Yeah. She let me, I showed my dogs when I was pretty young in the classes. And a lot of times mom had a professional handler's license. So she showed many dogs, but I was allowed to show my dogs against her clients' dogs. And,
mm-hmm.
and so I showed a lot of our dogs while she showed other people's dogs. So
of all the things you've accomplished over these many decades, what are you most proud of? Tell me something about that.
Well, to be put in the Hall of Fame is really an honor that for a Cocker person. I mean, I don't know how you could, how you could top that. And then to be voted in to judge the fraternity for the American Spaniel Club was an honor for, I think, mm-hmm. anybody that raises Cockers. I mean, to me, that was my greatest honor.
Great. Yes, and it's nice to hear some more about your time in dogs through this interview, too. So we have a brief history of you on the Hall of Fame that people can read. It has a little bit of story there, but of course, you know, you're adding a whole lot more color here. So in your success as a breeder, and what do you attribute your success to? I assume it's to your mom, because she was such an influence on you, but I asked the question of everybody, and there's probably some other people too, so I'll let you speak to that.
Well, I think it's because I got to travel to these shows, and I got to see a lot of the top dogs in the United States and the handlers. And and I not only seen them, I competed with them, which makes you, you know, appreciate. I've seen some really skilled handlers and some great dogs. And also, I worked 13 years for a veterinarian, and that way I learned a lot about the health of dogs and mainly the disposition of dogs. I knew at that time Cocker Spaniels had big eyes, and so whenever the dog would come in the vet clinic, everybody was scared to reach in and get a Cocker Spaniel for some reason, because they would stare at you. And so they would always call me back to get them out of the crate, because nobody else could get them out of the cage, just me. So you learn kind of like how to handle dogs, and I think that's because otherwise to be going to the vet going to the vet costs you $100, $200 every trip, no matter what it is. I went in and got a rabies shot for him. I had to pay $50 for the rabies shot and $50 for the exam. That's ridiculous.
Gosh. Yeah, that's nuts.
Yeah, it is crazy for something that you know you want. I mean, you should just be able to get the rabies shot and walk out the door, I would think. But, oh, no, they have to examine them, too. But anyway, the vet cost is getting out of hand. So I'm glad I had that training.
That is invaluable. I know I had friends that were, you know, vet techs, and I learned so much from them just being friends and, you know, telling me about dog issues, and I was very fortunate. And I think everybody needs to form a relationship with your vet if you can, because you can learn so much. But it's often difficult. Vets don't have time, or, you know, they don't appreciate breeders, you know. So working for one, I think, was probably a very valuable experience, I'm sure. Go ahead.
I said it made it possible for me to continue, you know, to raise dogs.
Mm-hmm. So the next question I always ask is kind of like, well, you know, when you have kids, you love all of your kids equally, right? So, of course, you have all of your cockers after all these years. But of all the cockers that you bred or knew, are there any individual dogs that were especially memorable for you?
Well, yeah, Champion, my Idaho Diamond Jim, was my favorite dog and my family's favorite dog and all the people at the dog show's favorite dog. On this dog, Diamond Jim was so interested in people, it was unbelievable. And I had him on top of the crate sitting there. And I was in the ring showing another dog, and anyway, my friend, I just met Emma Ross not too long before that, but for some reason she thought she knew me really well, and so she just took the dog off the crate and started parading him around the ring. I couldn't believe it. So I come out of the ring to get Diamond Jim to take him back in the ring for the variety, and there she was running around with him. So, I mean, it was so crazy, but he was a special dog. He had really kind of odd hair. It was naturally short on the back, and he had really full coat. For some reason, you could just take him right out of the crate and show him, and he always looked brushed. And I know Jim Sargent always said, he said, well, he's a sight to behold. But he was really probably the prettiest dog in my eyes that I've ever seen.
Sounds like he had great coat texture.
Yeah, he did. He had unusual hair. I mean, you can't take hardly any dog out of the crate and just run him in the ring, but you could with him. And around the house here, he always looked like a champion. So I kept him totally brushed until he was 12 years old, and then I cut his hair off. And it was sad when I cut his hair off, but because he was so pretty with it all.
Right. Yeah. Usually, if I kept mine and cut it all, they looked a mess, you know.
Yeah, I think he produced like over 60 champions, it seems like. So.
Did he? Yeah. He was named after Diamond Jim Brady?
No, I don't know why my mom named him Diamond Jim, tell you the truth. So.
Yeah, and the other question that, you know, we wasn't in the introduction, and maybe you know the number, but how many champions did you and your mom breed thus far from Idaho? Do you have it off the top of your head? Do you know?
No, you know, I don't know, and I tried to go back on the site and find out how much, how many we finished, but they don't go back that many years. So
oh, no, really?
I don't know how to get all the information, but we finished a lot, and I know it's over 200 for sure. I don't know how much over, but Mom finished a lot of Cocker Spaniels because there was a period where she just showed other people's dogs, and we didn't really breed any, but we did have, you know, one or two litters, so.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it wasn't in the introduction in your Hall of Fame thing, and I figured it was probably because you didn't count. And now, as you say, you can't go back and look it up because they didn't keep the records that well.
Yeah, my mom had it written down somewhere, the list of every year that the dogs finished their championship, but I can't seem to find the book. I haven't seen it for many years, but I'm sure when we move from Lewiston to here, I still have stuff in storage. I mean, I have boxes of stuff. It's probably in there, the old ones, but I just haven't found it yet. But but anyway, yeah, like I say, in the 70 years, I would think that we've had a dog in the ring all the years.
Mm-hmm. So. Amazing. So you mentioned lots of mentors, lots of folks that you and your mom interacted with. But are there any individual people in particular in your decades within Cocker to sort of stand out for you and tell us a little bit about that?
Well, when I moved from Lewiston, because I traveled to all the shows with Mom then, so I moved over here to Seattle, and I sold the little pet Cocker to Mary Lou Tainer, and she bought it for her daughter. And so anyway, we became pretty good friends, and so she started raising dogs, and she wanted to go to the dog show, so she traveled with me for quite a few shows, and she finished her own dogs under Tainer, and I showed them, and Jerry Moon showed them, and so anyway, but she was friends, and we kind of shared the expenses, and I had two kids that I took with me, so we had to babysit these two kids. And so we had some really amazing times because my two boys, they would pretty tricky sometimes. So she tried to help me with them, so we had a good time. She combed Champion my Idaho Point Bandit with my mother, so and she was also real good friends with my mom. Mm-hmm. And he won back-to-back best in shows and mini group wins and in Canada and the United States both. So, and then my friend Emma Ross, I think we probably co-owned maybe over 50 champions with her, maybe even more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And I traveled with Emma all over. We went to everywhere together, and she's still my friend, and she's had little health problems now, and I'm going to pick her up in a couple of weeks and take her to a show. She doesn't get to go to many, but I take her to the shows whenever I can, and she has just three older Cockers at her house now. Mm-hmm. That's about all she can take care of, but that's still a very, very good friend. And actually, when you share expenses and everything, it makes it possible to do this. Otherwise, mm-hmm. I don't know if I didn't travel with these two people. I don't really think I could probably do everything that I wanted to do. And then, of course, my family, they made it possible that I could go to these shows. So.
Right. Your sons are not interested in this?
No, they both, my one son has three Papillons, and they finished showed one for, she did quite a bit of winning with him, and my other son, they're into everything. I mean, he's not married, so he's not home that much, and he golfs and worth his work and everything, so he doesn't have any dogs, but they come down and take care of my dogs for me when I'm gone and stuff. They live.
Oh, do they?
That's nice. Yeah.
That's nice. So, yeah, that's nice. So. That's very nice. You know, your mother, then, she traveled by herself to all these places, didn't she?
Yeah, my mom
pretty
was
much.
The only child, and she she liked that, and you know, actually, in the old days when we would go, like, I mean, she'd go to Minnesota or somewhere to a dog show. They showed against Sinbad back there. We took Square Shooter and showed him against his father. And Mom would be driving, and she would wanted to rest her eyes. So I'd sit on the side and steer the steering wheel. I mean, it's a wonder we ever, I didn't even know how to drive in front of the steering wheel when I got my driver's license because I was so used to driving on the side.
Oh, Sharon, that's a fascinating story.
Well, yeah, we would, and then when, because it took so long to get any place from Lewiston,
yeah.
So we would drive, and then I would sleep, and then Mom would sleep, and I would drive. So we would drive, you know, like 12 hours straight or all night, so...
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's what we did.
But she also went lots of, you know, when you were talking about all the breeders that she visited, you didn't get to go along, so she'd do it all those drives on her own.
Yeah,
really,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, she liked the people, and being the only child, she could navigate that way. And my dad was 20 years older than my mom, so he liked to stay home. He didn't really want to travel. He didn't like to travel, and so I was never alone. I mean, every time I came home, my dad was there and my brother was there. And Mom was off to the dog show somewhere, wherever she could find one to go to.
I'm sure she loved it, though. That's great.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah, she did.
So, So we're talking about dogs. Are there any shows, wins, or events that were particularly memorable for you?
Well, when I took Nabisco to the ASC specialty, and I think I only had him at one other show, so I didn't even know for sure what he would do, so I carried him in a Sherford bag to the dog show, and everybody was amazed when... wondering how I got that great big dog in that little bag. But anyway, I took him because whenever we got off the plane or anything, I would open the bag and let him pop out. And so anyway, I carried him there, and I had no vision. I didn't even know how this dog would show. So before I showed him, I had to parade him around to see if he would even walk in the ring. Well, I won the variety with him, which I actually had another special to show. So Emma Roth had to take him in the first part of the variety because he was winner's dog. And then the dog I was showing, I think he made the first cut, and the second cut he didn't make. So then I was able to change and show Nabisco. And I won the variety, and then I won Best Cocker in Show, which was really exciting for me. And then after I won the Best in Show, I walked in and won Best Bred By in Show with him. So, and we won. It was that time when they had all the crystal that they gave out. So we had to have, we had a cart. We had to put all the trophies on that we won. And then we had to mail them because there's no way we could get them on the plane. So the hotel. Had, so that was that.
All
was,
with the dog in a Sherpa bag.
Yeah, well, my little doggie, and he was a bottle raised puppy too. I raised him on my kitchen counter. So he was.
I seem to remember that show. Was that in Valley Forge? Was that show, or was it in Jersey. It seems I seem to remember Nabisco. I don't remember what year that was, though.
Yeah, I think it was. I think it was 2006, something like that.
Yeah. Okay.
So. So anyway, but that was very exciting. Then my other exciting thing was Marie Riesel Torres Young bought Champion My Idaho Being Gorgeous. And anyway, Marie Santos was showing them, and I was with Riesel when the dog won Best in Show, the first show. So anyway, I said, well, aren't you going to give me the ribbon? And she looked at me like she was shocked. But then she said, well, okay, I'll give it to you. And then I said, no, I said, I'll take the one that she wins tomorrow. And so we was there, and the dog did win it again tomorrow, the next day. And that was very, very exciting to be with her during that. So,
right. So 2 days in a row. And did you take the ribbon the second day?
Yeah, I do. I have the ribbon. Maria still also gave me a photo album of the dog as she was being shown. I had that before the Best in Show, but Marie did a lot of winning with the dog, and Marisol showed her too quite a bit and did good. So,
yeah, that was the Best in Show rosette, right? Those are always pretty, red, white, and blue.
Yeah, and then when she finished her championship, I never really think that people should show dogs before they're 2 years old, because you never know what you have, because it seems like the muscle and the just the, how hard they get or the structure of them. So I told Marisol, I said, you should wait until the dog is two and then bring her out and see if she could win or not. And that's what I always figure with my dogs. I never figure I have a great dog until it gets 2 years old. And then I figure, okay, that's what it is. And it's, you know, the conditioning and the training and stuff that makes a difference in the dog. But I never get excited about them until they get that age myself.
Well, I think you learned that long ago, because I was taught that too. So that goes back to old-time breeders who said they mature at 2 and 3 years of age. You don't know what you have until then. And if you have these early flyers, and by the time they're 2 or 3, they're not much at all, which, you know, was always the argument. So that's a common validation of people that have been in the breed a long time. Many others say that too. So
yeah, it does. It definitely may, and I'd like to see a really an old dog too, to see, you know, just how they look. But a lot of times nowadays, the people have to place them at 6 or 7 so they can start a new puppy, because they can't have them, and they never really get to. The biggest test is to see how the dog ages, and, you know, it reflects on the health of the dog. So.
Yeah, as you spoke earlier, many times you need to place them in homes as they get old, just because you have to keep your numbers down, you know.
Yeah, that's the way you have to do it nowadays, even the large kennels.
Although it's nice. I have placed most of mine over the years, and it's wonderful to see them in homes with families and kids, and see them on a Christmas card or something. You know, it's kind of sweet.
Yeah. I groom dogs here. In fact, I still groom. I still work, and I give them away to my clients that are. In fact, I got a man that I trimmed his dogs for 40 years, and he just lost his dog again, and he's older like me, and so he wants to get an older dog, and I'm going to give him one of my champions. But I don't just give them to people that I don't know. I mean, like this guy, I've known him for 40 years, and he's going to be a wonderful home. And I get to trim the dog. He brings him in every month for a haircut. So,
so you'll see him. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So we've talked about so much. It's been really fun. Looking back over your life with Cockers, is there anything that you'd like to share with our listeners that we haven't talked about?
Well, I think you should join a Cocker Club, and you should also join an all-breed club and try to figure out what changes that you think it's necessary to keep the shows going and improve the sport of the Cocker Spaniels? Because there are it is changing because, well, right now they want to put in mixed breeds, which I can't really believe they're even suggesting that.
But, yeah, I know.
But the people need to, you need to help in the club. I mean, whether you want to belong or not, you should try to get involved and figure out how to make these shows better. And most of the clubs will take suggestions if people just give them to them. But that's what they, I mean, to say that they don't want to join the club, they should join.
Mm. The memberships are down for many of the clubs, so it's really hard for particularly the Cocker Spaniel clubs. You know, there's so many of them because in the days there were so many more breeders, you know, that could support them. And so I know they're all struggling very much.
Well, yeah, and it's hard to get this show that I just came to, there, I had the only Cocker Spaniel. No blacks, no buffs, and just me. Which is crazy. But so they need to figure out how to improve the shows somehow. But when you go to like the Seattle Club, they want $75 for the electricity. Well, if you go there with one dog, you can't really afford it if you're not a handler or anything. So you know, and the other people are blowing them out because they have a lot of money, and I guess. But anyway, there's no way I can afford to pay $75 for electricity to blow out my one dog that I'm showing. It's crazy.
You need to have Diamond Jim, then you can pull him out of the crate, and he looks just fine.
Yeah, that's what I need. I need that. Well, that's what my poor little dog now, Remarkable, that's what he has to do when he goes to that show. He has to get pulled out of the crate and show that way, too. That's what he does.
Well, Sharon, back in the day, in the 50s, they used to pull them out of the crate, run a slicker over them, and stick them in the ring. They didn't really do anything, you know?
Yeah, well, we would set up a whole bunch of wire crates in a row and put, we had a vacuum cleaner that would blow the air out, so we'd put the vacuum cleaner on one end and blow several dogs at the same time, and they would mostly all cage dry. And to this day, if I do Remarkable or anybody now, and I'm not going to a show, I just put him in the cage and let him cage dry. I think it's actually better for the hair. And then I spray him down and brush him out, so I don't really. Of course, when I'm showing him, I blow him out and brush him all the time while he's drying. But actually, if I do one right now, that's the way I do, just cage dry him.
Well, Sharon, it's been really great talking with you, and I really enjoy this, and I learned so many nice stories that you shared with us, and also about your mom. I wish I had known her, because she sounds like she was a fascinating lady to know.
Yeah, she was. She really was.
Yeah. I love that. Love it. And I just so amazed, because she drove all over the place, and she was curious, you know. She went and learned, and you know, people don't do, I mean, she did extraordinarily reach out to other, you know, breeders all over the country, and she did that on her own. So, you know, it's something to be learned there, and I admire her for her gumption to get up and go do that stuff, you know.
Yeah, she really did. She wanted to figure it all out and do the best that she could, and nowadays you don't really people back then, when you go to a dog show, you would go over everybody's dog, and nowadays it's almost like you have to ask permission to see a dog, and then when they show it to you, he's in a real strict show stance, and they don't really, I don't know, it's just different nowadays as far as seeing and going over dogs. So.
Yeah, it's been that way for quite a while, I think, if I think about it. You know, the handlers would stack a dog, and then you could go over it, you know, and there was no such thing as a free stack, or you can stack it yourself, or do that. They might do that for select people. So it's been that way a long time.
When I go over my own dogs, I just put a leash on them and just mostly just pat them and go over them just totally natural. It's, I don't know, because that's the way they are.
Uh-huh.
If you just do them in just a very, very casual, I don't even stand them or anything, just go over them, patting them on the ground and feeling of them, and because that's the way they're built. So,
well, you know, you can make anything look good. Right?
I had a little sway-backed one time that I trained it to hold its belly up. And anyway, so I'd kind of poke in the belly, and it was a dog that was lived here in the house and everything. So every time I would stand it, I'd make it. And I trained that dog to hold its belly up. It was really amazing. And anyway, it was not sway back when I was showing it. But anyway, she was sway back dog. But I taught her to. I taught dogs to do some amazing things, actually, just to see if I could teach them. So
you sound like me. I was partly the challenge of, you know, and then as long as you don't fool yourself into knowing that that's a fault and you don't want it, you know, it's just fun showing your own dogs, and particularly I would fall in love with them, you know. That was my problem. I don't know about you, but you probably fall in love with many of them, you know.
Yeah, well, I have pet dogs just like everybody else, so my pet dogs are my most valuable ones.
yeah, I know. And for me, they always seem to be the boy dogs. I don't know why, but I was just like, I don't need this dog.
Yeah, my two house dogs right now are females, but I'm like you. I mean, Stonewalk Square Shooter was a great dog. In fact, Stonewalk Square Shooter was the first dog I ever bought myself. My mom bought quite a few dogs, but I actually bought and paid for them. Mom, we went to the National Specialty, and Mom bought Champion Tucky Ho Touch and Go, and Ted Young was showing him.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
So Mom bought that one. And actually, before I went to the show, we bought Stonewalk Square Shooter from Ron Fabus. But at that show, I paid for him. So he was our dog, and we hadn't gotten him yet. And anyway, that was, and I just picked him out from a picture, and something told me I had to have that dog. And I think we showed him like 6 years. I think he was a top-winning sporting dog in the Northwest.
He was, yeah.
He's the best in show winner. But that was, I used my own money to buy that dog. So that's the first dog I ever bought. And my mom loved that dog. And she ended up, hers also was the best in show winning dog that she bought. I think she brought him home from that show and won two groups and a best in show with him. And she sold him to Japan, and I think he was a top stud dog there many years ago. But
I remember Square Shooter because I didn't like party colors that much, but he was a, at least from the photographs, he was a beautiful dog. I just thought he was so pretty.
Yeah,
I remember him, and I didn't realize that you owned him. I knew the dog, saw the pictures.
Yeah, it was in Mom's name. I showed him quite a bit, and Mom showed him. She took him to Reno and won Best in Show with him. She handled him for that, and I have that trophy and everything. But and Ron Fabus lived out here a while because I think he was in the Army or Air Force. Something in Madigan, or anyway, he lived out here, so we got friends with him and seen a lot of the Dream Ridge Cockers dinner date and all of those that were famous, and so I think that's kind of why he let us have him. He was already a champion when we bought him, and but we never ever seen him. So, but he was a great dog. So, but
very pretty.
Several great dogs that through the years, anyway, they were special.
Well, Sharon, it's been very special talking with you. Really enjoyed it, and I'm sure our you know, listeners will enjoy this as well. And thank you for sharing so many of these stories. It's partly why we do these things, is to, you know, these are the kinds of things you can talk about that you could never write, but, you know, just having a conversation, you know, they come out and they add color to our history. And so we thank you for that.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, and have a good day.
Yep. And hang on for a moment. And listeners, this will be the end of the recording.